God catches the wise in their own ruses. The Lord knows the thoughts of the wise and that they are vain. Of course, this is Paul. Paul is actually, I think, quoting from the book of Job here. What he's referring to, of course, is the wisdom of the world, right? The wisdom of the world. That is the very limited view that we have if we don't have God in the picture, right? There are things that make sense in this limited context of just seeing what we see in the world. But then the reality of God and that everything in reality is based on him broadens the vision to things that are to encompass things that are not really in the realm of possibility for the purely worldly mind. And this is what we see in the gospel today. Here's Simon, James, and our boy John, and they're professionals, right? This is what they do for a living. They're fishing. And Jesus comes along, and he's teaching there next to the lake, and here these men are working. They've been out there fishing all night. They were not having a good night of it. And despite all their knowledge, they were coming up short. That's why they call it fishing. You know, that's been my experience with fishing most of the time. You don't get the fish. But I'm sure that says something about me as a fisherman. But at any rate, so Jesus is, you can even just kind of picture the scene in your mind. He's getting pressed up against the shore because people are just crowding in on him, they're hanging on every word. They're wanting to, in a sense, get a piece of him. And so he enlists Simon. He says, "Hey, can I borrow your boat?" You know, he uses him as a lectern barge. And he's out there, and he can talk to a wider audience that way, and more people can hear him. And so really kind of turns the Sea of Galilee into an amphitheater. If you've ever been there, you can kind of tell it, you know, because it's very hilly, and it kind of rolls everything around the sea. It kind of rolls down in a hilly fashion down into the sea itself, and it's a beautiful place, really. But so he's out there, and he's teaching them, and finally, he turns to Peter, and he makes this strange request, right? Lower your nets. Put out in deep water and lower your nets for a catch. I don't know a great deal about the fishing there in the Sea of Galilee, but it's a rather deep lake, and a lot of the fish that they fish for there are a particular type of cichlid. You've probably heard of it. It's a tilapia, right? So they call it St. Peter's fish, you know, all the associations, but it's tilapia, right? It's a very ubiquitous fish throughout the world, and it's a great staple for poor people. But my impression of that fish is that it's a shallow water fish, right? So he's asking them to put out into the deep water where most likely the fish aren't. And he's asking them to fish during the day, which was also not necessarily like the greatest time to fish. And besides the fact that they'd been in that area all night and they hadn't caught anything, and, you know, like, okay, so this just seems to be silly and fruitless all the way around. And yet Peter, you know, having this like kernel of faith and some sort of blooming confidence in Jesus, that he does it. He's like, well, this doesn't make a lot of sense, but I'll do it because you asked, right? And then they get this enormous catch. And then he really sees like, uh-oh, there's something, someone great in my presence. He sees this godly work, and he knows that it's a miracle, right? Because he knows the profession in earthly terms so well. He's like, well, this doesn't make any sense at all. Much like people, doctors who perhaps are atheists or agnostics, you know, witnessing, evaluating some kind of, you know, church miracle of some kind, whether it's, you know, the incorruptibility of a saint or a Eucharistic miracle, you know, coming to faith because they, in their earthly conception of things, can't understand why this is the way it is, right? And it broadens their vision. Well, this happens to Peter, and his immediate response is one of fear and humility and wanting to distance himself from God, right? Wanting to distance himself from Jesus. Depart from me, I'm a sinful man, right? It's the same move as in chapter 3 of Genesis. You know, where are you? Well, we're naked, so we hid ourselves, right? We ran away and hid in the bushes. That instinct in us is so strong because we see the perfection of God and the perfection, the glorious, radiant perfection of God just highlights all of our imperfections. This is why, for instance, the saints would, as they ascended the staircases of holiness, would become more and more acutely aware of their own sinfulness. Because, again, in the face of God's perfection and radiant glory, like, what are we? Right? And that's not to denigrate our dignity. I mean, we're all the more dignified whenever we grow closer to God because we become more like him, and yet our awareness of how we fall short is intensified. So there's a certain kind of, like, painful purification that happens there as well. This humiliation, in a sense, builds in us humility, the recognition that we are not enough, we are not sufficient, we are not the center of the universe. All of those things are true. And we become more acutely aware of them as we grow closer and closer to the radiance of God. So Peter experienced this in a thunderclap. And so what does Jesus say to him? Yeah, you're right. Here, I'm going to give you this program of self-improvement, and you go and do this, and then whenever you get all this stuff figured out, come back to me, and we've got some work to do. He doesn't do that at all. He doesn't do that at all. He says, you are now a fisherman. I'm going to make you a different kind of fisherman. I'm going to make you the one who draws all people to myself. So he takes what Peter is, and he elevates it. He's a fisherman. It's what he is. It's what he does, right? He elevates it. He doesn't make him somebody else. He doesn't make him, you know, he doesn't swap their position. He doesn't make him into John the Evangelist. He doesn't make him into John the Apostle. He doesn't make him into John the Apostle, into Peter. He doesn't do that. He makes them who they are, who they really are, right? He takes what we are and he elevates it. There's that saying in theology, grace builds on nature, right? God makes us who we are, and then if we are cooperative, he elevates that. He doesn't make us somebody else. I think that's a very common misconception that people fall into, and the devil wants to convince us of this. He wants to convince us that what we are in the sight of God is worthless and that he has no use for us as we are. So God wants to take us and break us apart and take us apart and then reassemble us into something better. No. He wants to glorify what already is there in potential, in potency, right? He wants to make us more ourselves, not make us somebody else. And it seems contradictory because, you know, we have St. Paul saying on one hand, like, it is no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. Okay, it's not necessarily contradictory, though, because if we are created in the image and likeness of God, and Christ wants to become fully alive in us, then that image in us that's already there is magnified, right? We become more the image of God because we become more like Jesus. We become more human because we become more godlike. That's the move. So he doesn't want to destroy us. He wants to illuminate, glorify, perfect us. And it's he who does it, though. Once again, he didn't hand Peter the program for self-improvement. That's not what we do here. That's never been what we do here. Just try harder, right? I think that's some of that's, at least in our area and in immediate culture here, is kind of some of that Germanic sort of work ethic that has bled into everything, including our life of faith. Like, well, we just, you know, buckle down harder and work a couple more hours and burn a little more midnight oil and do this and do that, and then everything will work out because we you know, there's some virtue in hard work, absolutely, but, like, that ain't going to get us there. It ain't. You know, it's the grace of God that does so. And so Peter, you know, again, he knew his trade. He was a hard worker. He was a strong man. he, you know, evidently had some business sense, otherwise he wouldn't have stayed in business as a fisherman for as long as he did. And then, you know, and even he came up short, but with the grace of God and the instigation of Jesus, you know, things turn out in a way totally unexpected. So what is that for us? It's an invitation at the end of it to faith, right? Faith in the Lord. Faith in the possibilities that the Lord can bring about in our own souls and in our own situations that the world can't see. The world can't see those possibilities. But we maybe in the moment can't see those possibilities, but God sees, right? And we dedicate ourselves to him. We resolve ourselves to respond to his will, even if in the moment it doesn't seem to make a great deal of sense. Well, we see what can happen.